I think it's important to say I'm a little bit nervous right now. But thank you very much for having me. And this is a Scottish tune called Highland Laddie.
Echoes roar, Bonnie Lowland Lassie. And for thy lawful king his crown, Bonnie Helen Laddie. Trumpets sound and cannons roar, Bonnie Lassie, Lowland Lassie. All the hills with echoes roar, Bonnie Lowland Lassie. Glory, honor now invite, Bonnie Lassie, Lowland Lassie. Freedom and my king to fight, Bonnie Lowland Lassie.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Yeah. We got Cameron, somebody in the congregation recommended him to me, and I cannot remember who it was. So if it was you, thank you. Thank you. It's just wonderful. Thank you. So some of you may have come here to hear Birju Pandya speak today. He was supposed to be our guest. I'm not Birju. He is a friend of mine from up north. He's with the Service Space Organization that I participate in. It's a service organization, and Birju is a financial investor, and he brings kindness into the financial world. I can't even say it. He brings kindness into the financial world. It would have been really interesting, right? but here I am, and Birju is coming on another day. He couldn't make it today because his son got something contagious at daycare, and the doctor felt like it was better for them to stay home. He said he could possibly come, but I kind of weighed the possibilities, infect the congregation, or write a talk. It's nothing bad, by the way. It's just something itchy, okay? So his son is going to be fine. So anyway, I found this out on Friday, and I was kind of looking forward to like taking Saturday off and goofing around. So I found out I was going to speak on Friday late afternoon, and so I whined for a little while to anybody that would listen. And and then I was like, no, I like my job, and there's a perfection to this. There's a perfection to me speaking, and I'll just wait and see what that is, see what unfolds. And nothing was happening. No ideas. Blank, complete blank slate up here. Just into the white room, you know? So I said, okay, I'm gonna go to my bookshelf, I'm gonna just touch a book, I'm gonna pull it out, and I'm gonna open it up, and whatever it says, I'm gonna speak about that. So I went to my bookshelf, and I pulled out a book called Breathing Underwater by Father Richard Rohr, a Franciscan mystic, a great book. And the part that I pointed to said, I can't remember what it said. Oh, we have an infinite capacity for self-loathing. Woohoo! He was quoting another spiritual teacher, Henry Nguyen, and he was saying that we have this infinite capacity for self-loathing, and I thought, well, now there's a talk title. That's something I can get behind, right? Maybe not. But in my mind, it's evolving already as we speak, as I considered it into something more. So I promise you, this is going to be a positive message about self-loathing, okay? I don't know if we have an infinite capacity for self-loathing. I never really tested it, per se. Usually I'm trying to stop any self-recriminations that I might have. But if we do, it might be useful to wonder where that infinite capacity comes from, or where the tendency for self-loathing, or let's just call it shame, right? Shame has gotten a lot of publicity right now. People are actually coming out of the closet about having shame. So where did shame come from? You know, the typical thing is that we used to blame our parents, or blame somebody else, or blame ourselves, but I prefer just to blame God, because... Because, you know, I really think that we're made this way to a certain extent. That it's part of the universe's clever plan to get us to awaken to greater love, is to give us this world of contrasts, of darkness and light, of joy and sorrow, of esteem and non-esteem. Every hero journey that you read, and a lot of the mystical texts are hero journeys. You know, the Garden of Eden is a hero journey of being cast out and unbelonging and then trying to find our way back. And the crucifixion certainly is a heroic journey of facing one's doubts and fears and then going through something and then resurrecting. The Shiva Shakti story from Hinduism is a heroic journey where Shiva and Shakti are split apart and then they have to find one another again. Shiva stays in spirit, Shakti becomes matter, and then they have to find one another again through their divine remembrance. Every play that's ever been on stage, every movie that's ever been made is a hero journey of some conflict and then some type of resolution. And I think that we are living that. We are living that. We are living what it said in that beautiful poem that Hugh read about how Rumi says that love just so wants to love that it will actually endure abuse in order to be expressed. And actually, the non-loving, as we know, makes the loving much sweeter. when we have this world of opposites, the contrast exists to benefit the whole picture, right? If you think about it, we need contrast in order to navigate our world. One of my friends, Dr. Ken Gordon, was a ski patrol person up in Canada, and he said that when the ground was white and all of the surroundings were white and it snowed, people couldn't navigate. The ski patrol would have to go out and get them because they needed the contrast to find their way. When everything is white, he said, people would just fall over. Imagine? So that's part of this beautiful thing is this contrast that lives through us and expresses through us, and we get to be something bigger and greater than the contrast. Before we get there, though, one of the ways that we navigate, that we make it through the dark zone or the white zone or whatever zone we're in, is to really be truthful about what it is that we're experiencing. So if you have an experience of feeling shame or feeling loathing or anything like that, it's useful to, rather than pushing it aside, as we are so tempted to do, right? Anybody? Anybody have an addiction? No, I'm kidding. Sorry, you don't have to raise your hand. As we're so tempted to push it aside, it's much better to actually be truthful about what feels shameful or unlovable within us. What feels shameful or unlovable in us. It's not the truth, it's just what feels. Anytime we are comparing ourselves to another being, we are in relative reality, we are not in the absolute. The relative is made of comparisons, right? So I actually did some research on what shame feels like because I'm not familiar with the topic myself. So here I am lying in church, right? Okay. Perhaps you have experienced feeling like you need to get everybody to like you. Perhaps we have experienced feeling like somebody's going to discover that you're inadequate. Perhaps we have the feeling that we are about to fail at something. Perhaps we have the feeling that we don't have the right to exist as we are. That was the point of Bill's children's message, is that the universe needs us to exist as we are, but we often push that aside in response to the shame that we may feel about who we are. I remember hiking with a friend, with Lonnie, actually, who's here today, and I was telling Lonnie that up until several years ago, that was a big struggle in my life of wondering whether I had the right to take up space on a stage or a page. And Lonnie just kind of looked at me and rolled her eyes. She's a practitioner, so she knows, you know. So she just looked at me and she said, "You're here. What more evidence do you need?" Right? If we exist, we have the right to exist as we are, in all of our fullness, in all of our wholeness. But back to that feeling of shame and self-degradation and feeling like we're not enough or feeling like we're inadequate, what we do with that is that we torture ourselves with it as we try and push it away, and then we project it outwards. We project that feeling of inadequacy outwards. Or we, if we're rejection sensitive, we project the feeling of rejection outwards. We're looking to be rejected, right? One of my teachers said, guilt is an IOU for punishment. Feeling like we might be rejected is an IOU for the world to reject us. Not really, but it feels like the world is rejecting us. There's a saying, some of you may have heard this, that if you are a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail, right? If you are a nail, everything starts looking like a hammer. So if you are sensitive to being rejected or feeling inadequate or feeling like you're less than or feeling like you're not enough, everything becomes evidence of that. Not in real life, but in your mind, in your perception, everything becomes evidence of that. There's a classic story in the church that we often tease each other, myself and two other practitioners. There was a woman who was new to the church, and she was in one of the classes that I was teaching, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, we really liked her, and she seemed like she liked us, but she left. She left rather abruptly. And so I went to the two practitioners, and I said, well, that's my fault, because I must have put something offensive in the curriculum. By the way, you all should take my foundations class. There's going to be lots of offensive stuff in the curriculum. But I must have put something in the offensive in the curriculum, and she left because she felt offended. And somebody else, the other practitioner, said, no, it was me. I was the leader of her small group, and I know I said something that upset her. And then the other practitioner said, no, it was me. I moved her book, and it offended her. You see what I mean? That is gathering evidence and making ourselves responsible for somebody else's quote-unquote rejection. I ended up calling her because I was so curious as to whose fault it was. And it wasn't about me. And it wasn't about the practitioners. It was about her own life. Oh my goodness, she had a life of her own that did not involve us. She had something else that she needed to do. We were not responsible for her disdain and for the disgrace of leaving the church. The disgrace we felt that she left the church. It was her own thing, and it was something good. I don't remember what it was, but it was something good. So you see, we do that all the time, you know, and it's subtle. So if you would, take a moment just to kind of look at your life and see where something feels rejecting and say, oh, maybe this is me making up a story, looking for something out there that I believe in here. And then the task is to change what's in here, if we can, and not in the way that we might normally be tempted to change it. We often want to medicate stuff away, and I hate to have to tell you this, but sometimes what we teach in spiritual centers or churches or other places, sometimes that can be a form of medication, not meditation, but medication. Has anyone here ever slapped themselves with an affirmation in a punishing manner? Like, I am whole, perfect, and complete, right? Yeah, okay, so just Sally, okay, well, yeah. You should take Lori's mindfulness class afterwards, okay? Yeah. So we do that sometimes. We affirm the good without looking at the wealth of the darkness. We affirm the light without looking at the wealth of the darkness. And both are important. Let's look at the wealth of the darkness. Father Richard Rohr, the man who gave me this gracious talk title, he talks about, I heard in an interview that he did for NPR, he's becoming famous, you know, he's pretty well known, and he said that it's so easy for his ego to get out of check that he prays every day for a daily humiliation. And I'm like, well, Father Richard, clearly you are not as advanced spiritually as I am, because I don't have to pray for a daily humiliation. Just happens naturally. Oh man, I've got stories, none of which are church friendly, but I've got stories. Take my class, no. You know, probably one of the greatest humiliations that I had, or the potential humiliations, and when this happened, I knew that I had turned a corner. It was when I was in India, on the last trip, when I was there with Service Base, and there was a community night at the end, and there were probably about 200 people there, 200 to 300 people, and not people that I knew, but we were all, you know, wanting to make a good impression for these visitors to this event, and there were speeches, and there was singing, and there was some music, and stuff like that, and Nipun Mehta, the leader of the organization, asked me to sing. And I don't really do that anymore, but I'm in the habit of saying yes to Nipun, so I said I would sing. And I also told the guy, Fabrizio, who was doing the accompanist, I told him that I could learn anything and that he should pick out the songs and I would learn them really quick. So he did, and we rehearsed. And we didn't rehearse for very long, maybe just about 5 minutes, because then my friend Mandy, who was there, a cow stepped on her foot and and she needed some attention, so I went and I took care of Mandy. It's a very India story, right? Very all over the place, right? And so the time came to sing, and it was kind of dark, and people were coming up on the stage, and I'm sitting in the audience going, you know, I don't remember the tune to those songs. I don't remember the tune. And I never knew the words I was going to read them, but dang it, I forgot my bifocals, and I can't see the words. So got on the stage when it came time to sing. Fabrizio was very kind. He said, oh, Bonnie allowed me to pick the songs, and she was so gracious, and so, you know, if it's a little rough, that's why. And I just took the mic, and I go, I don't know the words or the tune. We're just going to have to take what we get. And so I sang it, and I figured out the tune as I went, and when the words came, I was singing in tongues, hallelujah, just singing in tongues, making up stuff all over the place. But, again, people were laughing, and they were laughing with me versus laughing at me, because I was laughing. I was not in a place of shame. It was embarrassing, but I wasn't ashamed about it. It was just the normal trip and fall thing, the stuff that comedy is made of, right? Have you ever listened to stand-up comics? Anybody here like stand-up comedy, right? It's all about embarrassment, humiliation, if you like. It's all about the frailty of being human. And we get to embrace that and love it and, most of all, find joy in it and laugh at it. Because it is. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. I see some people that look like they don't believe me, but it really, trust me, it really is. It's really funny. And, you know, the reason that this is so powerful is because it emulates the consciousness of absolute reality. The consciousness of God or higher power or spirit or love, whatever it is you want to call it. This ability to be with what is as it is and so it is, this ability is like God. We are made of pure awareness. We are the awareness of existence in a human form. We are the awareness that accepts everything. We are like a blank screen upon which the imagery of the universe is projected. When you go to the movies, if it's a movie like, say, the Bette Davis one where she serves a rat to Joan Crawford, right? The screen does not reject that. It doesn't reject that and accept, I don't know, Sound of Music. I'm tempted to do the Maria, but no, I won't. Okay. We are like that blank screen where there are images flowing through us all of the time, and the key is that they flow through us. We do not have to over-identify with anything that we think about ourselves. And that's what makes us love like spirit loves. That's what makes us, we don't have to be made it, we are it. That's what re-identifies us with the truth of who we are, which is awareness that is aware yet unaffected and accepting of all things. Tara Brach, this Buddhist teacher that we've been working with for the last month or so, she talks about this, and in other words, she talks about how when you are feeling something shameful come up, or some type of pain, or some type of fear or doubt or whatever it is, something that you feel deeply, then just be with it. Just allow it to be. Allow yourself to feel it without pushing away. You know, really, the pain in pain is the resistance to pain. When we just allow ourselves to feel it, it's fine. We see that it doesn't have to have any power over us because the greater part of us, the all-knowing consciousness part of us, is looking at the pain. We are that which we are looking with. And so we just allow it to be. And then she says to talk kindly to it. Talk kindly to yourself. You know, one of my favorite stories, I'll tell it again, I've told it too many times, but I'm telling it again, dang it, is the story about when the rabbi, Rachel Remen, is talking about this Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur service, and the rabbi is holding this little girl, and she's about two, and she's grabbing his necktie and putting it in her mouth, and she's pulling out his nose and taking off his glasses, and he's trying to do his sermon, right? He's holding his daughter during a sermon, and people are laughing and smiling, and they're clapping for her. And they say, and he said, the rabbi says, he goes, you know, this is probably not considered really appropriate behavior, but nobody is judging her. And tell me, folks, at what age should we start judging her and criticizing her? She's two now, maybe when she's five, maybe when she's 10, maybe when she's 40, maybe when she's 80. We can love what is happening without identifying with it. Some people think that when we do that, we will run amok. We will let all of our flaws out and nobody will like us and we'll run amok and we'll be horrible people and we'll do bad things to others. But if we are looking at ourselves from that place that is aware yet unaffected, that place that is powerful, that place that is presence, that place that is pure love, that place sees that there is only one being. And that place is incapable of hurting others. That place loves everything as it loves itself because it is itself. That place is capable of infinite self-loving. So I'm changing my talk. I'm changing my talk title here at the end. It's no longer we are capable of infinite self-loathing. It is we are capable of infinite self-loving. Let's do that now. Let us love ourselves fully and freely and abundantly, and let us pray.